C1AP, number 14B.
How does Mrs. Eddy explain that Christ sense? She explains it on line 26 to 30. And says, a louder song. You know, she has stopped with, what shall we say of the conquest of all sin? Well, what comes then is a louder song, sweeter than has ever before reached high heaven, now rises clearer and nearer to the great heart of Christ. Can you see it's the tone of Christ? For the accuser is not there. It's only one accuser. It's only in the singular. For the accuser is not there. So we don't kill the accusations that come day and night. We kill the accuser. If we kill the accuser, he cannot more accuse day and night. If we kill the noumenon of evil, then there are no phenomena of evil. For the accuser is not there. Why? And love sends forth her primal and everlasting strain. Can you see how she deals with it? Again, through the Gabriel sense of thing, through love. For love sends forth her primal and everlasting strain. How on earth does that meet the accusing day and night? It meets it by saying, love says, I let flow outwardly and flow and let flow and flow. And if I let flow, and love has that everlasting sending forth its own idea, nothing can flow inward. So I'm not waiting until something flows inward and then I kill it. Huh? Then I wait until the next one comes in and then I kill it. Huh? But it says, I'm going to be such a strong well of life that I let flow out of me that everlasting strain. Love never losing sight of loveliness. And there is no influx possible of evil. Then I kill the accuser and not the accusations. So with the synonymous term, we always can handle the noumenon of evil. With metaphysics, we only can handle the phenomena of evil. Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? Now we go back to Christianity, to line 17. And they overcame him. They, the brethren. Can you see it's at once the Christianity standpoint? Always when we come to the standpoint of man or of idea as a central point, then we have the standpoint of Christianity. So, and they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. How? How do we overcome by the blood of the Lamb? And they loved not their lives unto the death. Can you hear the tone of laying down the mortal? That is the practice, that is the demonstration of Christianity, that they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, and that is explained that they loved not their life unto death. What are we doing? What is our Christianity? That we love our life and love it very much, and we love it and love it and love it and hope we can love it a long time. If possible, 80 years, 90 years would be wonderful. 100 years, perhaps one time we will love it. 140 years, and one perhaps 150 years. What does that mean in the eternality of being? Nothing. But that's our Christianity. Trying to keep our life alive. Whereas true Christianity says you don't need to love your life unto death. That's not what it is. You should lose it. You should lay it down. You shouldn't think that you have your own life. There is life, but that life is God, and not you, and not your life in the body. Where have you been the 4 billion years before? I think 4 billion or 4 or 5 billion, since the first motion of life was on this earth. Where have we been before? What matters about those 80 years or 70 years or 90 years and so on? What does it matter? What has that to do with life? It has nothing to do with life. There's only one life, and that is God being. You better come out of that false sense that you have a life and that you love your life and fight for your life and demonstrate your life unto death. Finally, you have to go anyway. Where are you going? Where are you going? Where do you come from? Where have you been 100 years ago? Where have you been 1,000 years ago? Where have you been 1 billion years ago? So as long as we think about life in the terms of years, in terms of time, we haven't touched the right tone of life. So he says life is really, you really touch only the true life through the blood of Christ, by laying down your mortal life, crucify your mortal life. Then you have a chance for resurrection and ascension, but not before. If we hang on to the life of mortal life day and unto death, we never touch the true sense of life. It's hard to say so, but it's the only freeing sense that we can have, that we say, golly, what is being? Is being a body? Is being in a body? Is being in that nasty body that the one day feels sick and the one day feels quite well? That nasty body that has to grow and then afterwards decays and then afterwards somehow is put somewhere in an oven and burnt up and then the dust goes into the wind. Is that life? Is that what we are working for and working for like hell? And the Revelator says, no, no, don't love your life unto death. Lay it down. So the explanation that Mrs. Eddy gives on this is way down on line 30. She says, self-abnegation, see, the blood of the Lamb, they left not their self-abnegation, by which we lay down all for truth or Christ, in our warfare against error, is a rule in Christian Science. We can't get around that rule. Christianity is using, to use it, and that is self-abnegation. This rule clear, oh, it's so beautiful. This rule clearly interprets God as divine principle. Now she puts in place of God the divine principle. Dash, what is that divine principle? As life represented by the Father. It's only represented, it's only symbolized by the Father. As truth represented by the Son, symbolized by the Son. As love represented by the Mother, symbolized by Mother. So God is as a symbol, Father, Son, and Mother. But if we want to know what that symbol really stands for, we get the clearer sense when we say that is not God, Father, Son, and Mother, that is divine principle, life, truth, love. And the measure that we can see that, we lay down even a religious sense of God and man. And begin to realize, well, I don't know if we begin to realize, but we should begin to realize, really. Try it. I always make this this exercise if I drive with the car somewhere or wherever it is that I'm not really studying, then I take up these things and say, Now, how would the world look like? What kind of a world would I have if I cut out of that whole picture the term God, the concept of Father, the concept of Son, and the concept of Mother? What is left? Can you figure out what is left? Nothing. Nothing that is any more human or material. If we leave out the concept of God and man, there is actually not much left here. And yet spiritually we will gain everything. Spiritually then we would say yes, but we would have divine principle, life, truth, love. That would constitute our being. That will constitute our whole being, the whole divine family, so to say. And there I would not worry about God and about man, and about the universe. I wouldn't worry. There I wouldn't worry about mother and father. And I wouldn't worry about the son, about man. Try to think these things out. They really break up all the limitations that we have with us from a religious standpoint. And they usher us really into true Christianity. Here you have your true family, your true Christianity. Mother, son, and father. Life, truth, and love. That's the only family, that's the family of man, that's the family of the universe that exists. And that family doesn't quarrel. And for the first time we don't have any more family quarrels. Wouldn't that be nice? So, she says, this we get only through self-abnegation. See, that is the rule, she says. So that self-abnegation shows clearly that what we call God or Father, Son and Mother is actually divine principle, life, truth and love. And if we would really get hold of that, a tremendous freedom would come on us. Then she says, every mortal at some period, can you hear? Every mortal at some period. He can do it now, he can do it in the period of 2500, he can do it in the period of 5200 AD, he can do it at any period. But if he has to do it once, let's do it now. Why hereafter? Why not here? Everyone at some period, here or hereafter, must grapple with and overcome the mortal belief in a power opposed to God. We have to grapple that we believe that there is a power, that there is a universe which is apart from God, that there is a universe of people, a universe of matter, a universe of wars, a universe of politics, a universe of economy, a universe of bodies, a universe of people, and I don't know what. Once we have to grapple that thing, it doesn't exist. They are mortal concepts. Why these mortal concepts are so strong on us, I don't know, but they have come over the years and over the thousands of years and archetypal beliefs and so on. Let's get rid of it. We know that they are not reality. But who has the courage of that kind of self-abnegation? To give up the belief, I have no parents. I have no parents. Because I have no parents, I am not a bodily person. That I must also say. So I must go on with the sense I am something completely different than the product of parents. Reality, consciousness, or what is called manhood, is a calculus of ideas. And I have to accept that. And mortals must at some period grapple with and overcome that mortal belief. Let me go back and come to the fourth side of signs, signs and suffering. So we go to page 568 back, line 19. Therefore, rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. He said, only rejoice, ye heavens. Doesn't say rejoice ye on earth and on the sea. Only rejoice in the ideational universe. We go over to page 569 and see what Mrs. Eddy says about that science attitude, and you see at once in the side note, marginal heading, the robe of science. So she gives the science touch to this whole story, where she says, the scripture, thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee ruler over many, is literally fulfilled when we are conscious of the supremacy of truth, by which the nothingness of error is seen, and we know that the nothingness of error is in proportion to its wickedness. He that touches the hem of Christ's robe and masters his mortal beliefs, as she had said in Christianity, animality and hate, rejoices in the proof of healing. What is that proof of healing? Dash, in a sweet and certain sense that God is love. There's so much in that. Did you catch the main thing of it? I read it again. The scripture, thou hast been faithful over a few things, I will make thee ruler over many. Can you see what that means? That's science. Huh? Science is always that reduces the many to a few, that reduces the infinite to a system. What we can see is that we reduce the infinite phenomena to some noumenon. What are the few things? The few things which we have are the capitalized terms. There are a few things, and they cover the many, the infinitude. All is somehow bedded within the capitalized terms. There is nothing of which has a nature of reality outside the capitalized terms. So again, we see that if we understand the noumenon, then we master the phenomena. So let's be faithful over a few things. Let's be faithful over the definition of God as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Let's be faithful over the few things of the Holy City, where Christ, Christianity, and science. And I will make you ruler over many. This is science. To reduce infinity to the few. And of this, he says, is literally fulfilled when we are conscious of the supremacy of truth by which the nothingness of error is seen. Can you see? It's just truth and error. It is not truth and many, many errors. It is just to see the supremacy of truth over error, over the fact that there could be error, the consciousness of the supremacy of truth by which the nothingness of error is seen. You see, it's not the battle of truth over errors, but it's seeing that if I see truth, I cannot see error, the nothingness of error. And that natural at once the tone of love. Because the love is that which says, I'm all or nothing. And we know that the nothingness of error is in proportion to its wickedness. Therefore he, now comes the brethren, he that touches the hem of Christ's robe and masters his mortal beliefs, animality and hate, that's what she proposed in Christianity, every mortal at some time must grapple and overcome mortal belief. If he has done that, he rejoices in the proof of healing. And it's interesting to see that she elaborates what the proof of healing is at this point of love. At the point of love, the healing is, the proof of healing is that we have a sweet and certain sense that God is love. The proof of healing is here that we see that love does not know error. Truth shows us the nothingness of error, and love shows us that we cannot be conscious of error. It's more than just seeing the nothingness of error, but that love cannot be conscious of error. Yeah, I've always seen in this whole chapter, the moment she touches on love, it is that love is the ever-presence of ministering love, that love never loses sight of loveliness, that love and its idea are one, that love and its idea are wedded. There is no accuser there. There is not even to see the nothingness of error, because it not even is aware of error, so it not even has to see that there is nothing. It's just more than that. It's just seeing the point of love, and that shows the science of it. Right afterwards comes the suffering part of it. But before we go on there, let's go back to the Bible. I stopped on page 568, line 20. After rejoice ye heaven, he says, woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come down unto you, having great wrath. And we just feel how it depicts how error is let loose on us, because he knows that he has but a short time, meaning that error will destroy itself. But it has a short time. It has a short time. He has always a good time with us. He always can plague us either for hours or for days or for months or for years. He has a short time. But he is not eternal. We know that error will destroy itself. But that is through suffering. If it has a short time, we experience error as suffering. So Mrs. Eddy explains further, if we go again to 569, line 14. Oh, now, alas, for those, it's woe to the inhabitants, alas, for those who break faith with divine science. Now comes the suffering. Those who do not want to go along with divine science, and fail to strangle the serpent of sin as well of sickness. They are dwellers still in the deep darkness of belief. See, these are the dwellers on the earth and the sea. They are in the searching sea of error, not struggling to lift their heads above the drowning wave. What must the end be? What is the end if we don't take the divine method of warfare in science? What is their end? They must eventually expiate their sin through suffering. Did I pronounce it right, to expiate? The sin which one has made his bosom companion comes back to him at last with accelerated force. Now the time is short, for the devil knows his time is short. Here the scripture declares that evil is temporal, not eternal. It's only a short time. The dragon is at last stung to death by his own malice. So we can see, can you see here how error, the method of meeting error with error, that is also a method, but it's a long-drawn method, a suffering method. And that which kills, that error is error itself. That it is stung to death by his own malice. But how many periods of torture it may take to remove all sin. And you see, she comes back to that question, what would we say over a victory over all sin? And she has said, there is a shortcut to it. Just see that love is not aware of anything unlike love. That's the divine method of warfare. If you don't see that, then, here, but many periods of torture, it may take to overcome all sin, and that must depend upon sin's obduracy. So, just as far as this point we'll go, that we can see can you see at least that these few biblical verses that we had, verse 10 to 12, that Mrs. Eddy explains them step by step over the next page. So when you read it, study it together, parallel, or else one doesn't quite know what she's saying all the time if one does not compare it with Revelation. But they show really the great question for victory over a single sin, we give thanks and magnify the Lord. What will happen if the victory over all sin? So she gives two methods. The one method is a method of love. Love sends forth her primal and everlasting strain, and nothing can flow inward. That's one method, the Gabriel method. But then if you don't do that, she said, for those who break faith with divine signs, will they be lost forever? Everlasting punishment. Is there everlasting punishment? She said, no. Evil will punish itself and therefore destroy itself. So there is a salvation for you for that too. Naturally, we must see that is the way of suffering. And it takes some time for evil to destroy itself. And some people like to take that way. Funny enough, most people like to take that method of letting suffering destroy evil.